that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. It's Sunday night, March 23rd, May 23rd, 2021. Mark and Mark, Daly and Hamilton here to recap what was a very interesting and entertaining and dramatic Monaco Grand Prix. And I don't even know where to get into this one. I went back, I watched the race this afternoon. I actually had to go back and watch qualifying again before we sat down this evening just to try and absorb everything again. There is a lot that happened, even though there may not have been like the huge bounty of overtaking that we would want to see, but we typically don't see at Monaco. But yet, I felt it was an enjoyable race to watch. What was your takeaway, Mark?
I pause because even now, hours later, I'm still trying to gather my thoughts on what we saw this weekend. It was interesting. Like, I think, to be fair, it wasn't a great race. By no means was it a great race. But no. The weekend as a whole was still very interesting. A lot of very interesting things happened. And I think there's some good stuff for us to talk about. But I'll be the first to acknowledge it. And maybe the two of you, or the two of us, were a little bit guilty of building Monaco up to be something that it's never going to be to so many of our newer listeners that are newer to the sport. Monaco's special for a lot of reasons. And we'll probably get into this throughout the course of the podcast. But ultimately, the Formula One racing cars of today aren't necessarily suited to its tight, twisty, winding streets, and we're never going to see a really classic duel. We're never going to see a ton of overtaking. But that said, the weekend was still interesting, and I think we still have some really cool stuff to break into.
Okay, well, before we get into that, let's just run down the 10 top positions here in the race classification. Max Verstappen winning his first Monaco Grand Prix, followed home by Carlos Sainz in the Ferrari, which is a bit of a shocker in and of itself. Lando Norris, P3 for McLaren. Sergio Perez in the second Red Bull. Good afternoon for Sergio, made up quite a bit of ground on a track that is notorious, as you said, for not very much overtaking. He was P4. Sebastian Vettel in the first of the Aston Martins, P5. Good to see Seb up there in the points and particularly in the top five. Pierre Gasly in the AlphaTauri. Lewis Hamilton, P7 for the Mercedes, in which was an absolutely brutal and disappointing weekend for the team all around. Lance Stroll, P8 for the second Aston Martin, so a double points finish for them, first of the year, which was good to see. And then he had Esteban Ocon, P9 for Alpine, and then Antonio Giovinazzi rounding out the top 10. Now, this is where it gets even more interesting. In the Drivers' Championship, the first five places, we have Max Verstappen now leading the Drivers' Championship, 105 points, 4 points ahead of Lewis Hamilton with 101. Lando Norris, I wouldn't say comfortably in third, but sitting currently in third with 56 points, ahead of Valtteri Bottas with 47. Sergio Perez rounding out the top five in the Drivers' Championship with 44 points. Now then, equally as interesting, now in the Constructors' standings, Red Bull now top of the table with 149 points, a single point ahead of Mercedes. Then you have McLaren with 80 points, Ferrari with 78, and then Aston Martin with 19 points. So, Mark, dramatic finish on the track, and it's really flipped the championships upside down.
It's crazy. And one of the things that I heard listening to the Checkered Flag podcast earlier today, and it's funny because I was actually at that Grand Prix, but the last time that Mercedes didn't lead the Constructors' Championship was the British Grand Prix in the summer of 2018. They have had a stranglehold on the Constructors' Championship for three consecutive years now. And I think prior to that, they'd had a stranglehold for 4 or 5 years. So really, with the exception of that one kind of aberration in the summer of 2018, they have had a stranglehold. So this is it's exciting. And whether it sticks or not, or whether it sustains or not, I think it could be a turning point. And it's something I think you and I have really been speaking to over the last couple of weeks and months, that this is going to be a tight duel. And I think more often than not, a mistake, an error, they'll probably define the championship as much as a great drive might potentially do so. And I think if you look at the weekend, you're absolutely right. For me, the story is, it's less about what Red Bull did necessarily, and Max put in a great drive, and he had a great start. Didn't come out of the box really well, but he fought off Valtteri in the first corner, and I'm strongly of the mind that Valtteri should have had that corner and taken the lead. But ultimately, it was more about what Mercedes didn't do as opposed to what Red Bull did. And full credit to Max for a great drive. 78 laps from the front of the pack that takes tremendous concentration. He didn't step a foot wrong. Kudos to Sergio. He looked really rough in practice, didn't look great in qualifying, but put together a great drive on the Grand Prix Sunday, which was fantastic. But ultimately, and I don't know where we want to start, you hinted at this, Mercedes had a terrible weekend. Lewis finished seventh, but if not for the fact that two cars DNF'd in front of them with Leclerc and Bottas, he would have finished ninth. Bottas DNF'd because of an error in the pit, but even before that, Hamilton, he didn't look great in practice, he wasn't great in qualifying, he probably would have qualified a little bit better if not for the Leclerc incident with 23 seconds left. Yep. But ultimately, they didn't put together a great weekend. They scored virtually no championship points. And to your point, that's how Red Bull was able to leapfrog ahead of them.
Yeah, well, you know, you touched on it nicely there, just that incident with the Charles smacking into the barriers right at the very end of the last qualifying session there, literally when a lot of these guys were going to go and try and nail another hot lap after the time was about to expire. So It was interesting, and ultimately a couple of guys really paid for what was basically a really scruffy lap. Lewis was one. I mean, he tagged the barriers there, and Sergio Perez. Sergio, I mean, he got a little bit up on the curbs in the same place basically where Leclerc was going to have his accident, but then he also got really, really caught out when he went around the corner there, the final sharp corner there, Raskas, and there was about three cars all parked there at the side, and then, you know, he put the gas down, very nearly tagged the Armco barrier at the left rear of the car, so it was really sloppy, so he got caught out there, but I think he did a phenomenal job to finish where he did at the end of the race. I mean, he did very well to make up that amount of space on a position on a track that is notorious for not having very many opportunities, but it definitely was not a good look for Mercedes. I mean, the thing is, we've become so accustomed to them like working like this fantastic, well-oiled machine. I mean, as Toto Wolff and many others have said over the years, that we're chasing perfection here, and they have literally been the example of that. At least publicly, we don't know what trials and tribulations go on behind closed doors over the race weekends and in between races, but certainly the perception is that things usually go their way, you know, be it in the garage, be it on the track, be it on the pit wall, you know, they tend to be on point. But the thing that we've seen over the years, that there have been these isolated incidents, and, you know, Monaco now has kind of reared its ugly head for them on a couple of occasions now this year and going back to 2017. So it is going to be fascinating to see how they rebound from this, because we've seen in the past that whenever Mercedes has been dealt adversity like this, they tend to go away from a race, they double down on their efforts, and they come back better than before. So now going to Baku, which is going to be fascinating, and I want to sort of parlay this into a little bit of the Ferrari discussion we'll have at some point as well. So Baku is going to be a similar kind of circuit. You got these tight, very sharp street type corners, but where the difference is with Baku City compared to Monaco is you've got, yes, correct, the very long straightaway. So that's going to be fascinating from a couple points of view, for a couple of different teams here. But I'm now very, very fascinated to see what they're going to do in the interim now to turn this thing around, because, we heard Lewis talking about it. He was complaining about it on race radio. So you can imagine in the team debrief after the race that there's going to be a lot of grumpy people there. I'm sure that Bottas is going to be pretty choked about the incident that ruined his race with the stripped wheel nuts. And I mean, just bad all around for them. And it'll be interesting to see how they turn it around. Or do they turn it around for next race?
One of the things I always credit Lewis Hamilton for is, in the event of a race victory, he's the first guy to praise the team. This is a team victory. Yeah. Everyone in the garage was great. Everyone at the factory was great. Everyone at headquarters was great. But this weekend, he was very pointed about the fact that this was a Mercedes team failure across the board. And it's rare that you hear him speak like that. And ultimately, from his perspective, I think he was a little bit thrown off by the tire strategy. I think he was expecting to go long. They called him in early. He wasn't expecting that. But he didn't have the pace. He wasn't looking super racy. Again, you talk about qualifying as well and the fact that he was looking potentially to put in an additional hot lap when Leclerc hit the barrier. But ultimately, it's not like Lewis to have to wait until the final minute of Q3 to put in a great lap. Typically, he goes out there, he puts in a banger of a lap, and he's done. He rarely risks it in the way that he did this weekend. And maybe it wasn't so much that he was subconsciously just putting off that final hot lap until the last minute, but rather the package wasn't there, the pace wasn't there, psychologically they weren't there. But I was also a little bit taken aback by a comment that Lewis had made on, and I'm not even going to repeat it on the air, but he'd made a comment on Instagram relating to this weekend, and he said, quote unquote, yeah, this weekend sucked, the B word. And again, I'm not going to say it out loud, but I'm just like, that's not like Lewis. That's not like Lewis of 2021 to make a comment like that. That's so inflammatory. And then from Bottas's perspective, heartbreaking, absolutely heartbreaking. I fault him early on in the race. I feel like he had a better start. He had a jump on Max Verstappen out of the box, and he had the better position going into that front corner. It's a right-hand turn. He had the inside line on Max, and he led off, and Max did it. And I honestly believe that Max understands the psychology of Bottas, knows he's a super, super conservative racer, but Bottas should have had him in that front corner. Mm-hmm. But then what happened when Bottas came in for the pit, and you spoke to this a couple minutes ago, and again, serious plug for our Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. We created a visual graphic to help understand what happened to Bottas in the pits. But what happened to him in the pits ultimately was heartbreaking and was absolutely no fault to Bottas at all. And you could see him in the back of the garage after he got out of that car, just leaning down. His elbows are on his knees and just heartbroken because, again, we all know, and I think he knows, that his job's at risk. Every point matters. Every podium matters. And for him to have a potential podium robbed from him in this way is heartbreaking. And I think it's challenging, too, because you don't know who or what to blame for what transpired. And I know a lot of folks reached out to us on Twitter, so I'll kind of speak to this quickly. But you see him go into the pit and that front right corner. The mechanics couldn't get the nut off of the axle stud. They couldn't get it off. And what we think happened is that when it was put on, there was some cross-threading of the threads. And there are only 3 to 5 threads on an F1 wheel because they want to be as efficient and optimized as possible. But ultimately, when the mechanic went at it with the gun, it basically blasted the fins, and the fins are what's on the nut that the gun grips onto to turn the nut to pull it off of the stud. They actually blasted off, and you can actually see it in one of the video replays that we posted on Twitter. You could see the shards of aluminum spray back at the mechanic. I have never, ever, ever seen this in the history of Formula One. No. So again, just heartbreaking for Bottas.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt so bad for him because when things like that happen, I mean, it's completely out of your hands. And it was super, super frustrating having to watch him go through that. And then, well, we'll talk about the Ferrari bit in the next segment. But excuse me, I was just going to say it was... just going back to your comments about Lewis, but the way that he was just venting, just very, very frustrated, both on social media, on the radio. I mean, I guess that isn't really new territory. I mean, we've seen sort of limited outbursts, in the past. I guess the most notable one that really stands out in my memory are the final laps of 2016 at Abu Dhabi with the championship on the line, and you had Patty Lowe was on the radio. Yes, I was just drawing a blank there. Patty Lowe was like, come on, Lewis, you got to speed it up. You're backing your teammate into, I guess it was Sebastian and Max at that point, who I think they were content just to sit back and let these two do whatever that they wanted to. And then Lewis was like, well, I'm basically losing the championship, so I don't really, it doesn't really matter to me. I can't remember his exact word. So that one sort of stands out. And then occasionally, he'll hear something if some strategy goes wrong. He'll be like, okay, come on, guys, what are we doing here? We need to focus. So this was very out of character, but I don't want to suggest that Max and Lewis kind of switched places. They sort of like switched bodies and cars or whatever it is for this weekend. But it was interesting watching Max, but maybe that is the benefit of leading the Grand Prix in Monaco. And, you don't have, you're just worrying about the cars in front of you that you're trying to get around. And most of the time they are going to be pulling out of the way when waved with the blue flag, rather than having to scrap it out in the, further down in the pack there. But I thought that Max, he didn't put a wheel wrong, not just to enter during the entire race, but to basically all throughout the entire weekend. I know that he got had a little bit of a moment. I think he sort of locked up maybe his brakes going into the into the tunnel on what I guess became his final hot lap in Q3. But I mean, other than that, he looked pretty good all weekend long. And just watching him lead that Grand Prix reminded me a lot of sort of the perfect, flawless performances from Lewis Hamilton. That was my take. I don't know what you thought of that.
Oh, I completely agree with everything you're saying. And I actually kind of want to refer to a tweet that one of our listeners tweeted at us earlier today, Jason Gallimore. And I quote, "I'm not a Hamilton hater, but he seems so whiny on the radio. Like, yeah, man, mm-hmm. You really are in sixth place. Welcome to the reality for the first time in almost a decade for everyone not in that mega car you drive." And you kind of hit on it, which is what prompted me to go back and reflect on this tweet. But you're right. We often hear this type of... We kind of hear this commentary from Hamilton sometimes, but I think one of the things that's kind of played into Hamilton's hands over the better part of the last 6 or 7 years is he's never really had to come from behind, either in an individual race or a championship. And really, for the first time, except for that brief period in 2018 and a little bit in 2019, he's really coming from behind now, both on the track and off the track. And I'm as excited, or I shouldn't say excited, I'm as curious to see how he responds off the track to this as I am to see how he responds on the track. Because again, what we're seeing from Hamilton both before the race, during the race, in terms of his commentary, in terms of his tweets, in terms of his responses to questions, it's a little un-Hamilton. And again, to Jason's point, what we hear on the radio from Hamilton isn't unusual. He's always very, I shouldn't say, because I don't know if it's a verb, but very complainy. His tires are always problematic. His tires are gone. Then he puts in 4 fastest laps in a row and wins the Grand Prix by 20 seconds.
Yeah.
But I think what we heard today was a little bit excessive even for Hamilton. So I'm very, very curious to see how this is going to play out because, again, he's potentially going to be facing pressures this year that really he hasn't seen since the back half of 2016. And ultimately, we all know how that championship played out. But very, very, very curious.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Mark, let's take a quick break here. And when we come back on the other side, let's dive more into the tweets and the emails, whatever else we have. And we'll take it from there. And we'll do so in just a moment. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The founder of Panasonic once said,
"We can lead more meaningful and constructive lives
through the pursuit of activities that will ensure
a better today than yesterday,
a better tomorrow than today."
Panasonic is committed to creating a greener,
more equitable future for everyone.
Explore Panasonic Green Impact
at na.panasonic.com/greenimpact.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. And Mark, where should we take it from here? Okay. Let's go back to the Twitters at Diehard Racers about the different conspiracy theories of Leclerc's crash and qualifying, Hamilton's pace, Bottas' pit stop drama, pace difference between Norris and Ricciardo. So, I mean, there's a couple of things there. We've already touched on a couple of those. I mean, Hamilton's lack of pace. I mean, that I was actually very astounded by that. I think we've seen enough so far to really kind of get an idea of where these cars are good at and where they're not. The Mercedes, without a doubt, was the best package in Portugal and Spain, which were two very similar tracks. Then Imola, I think that maybe there was a slight edge to Red Bull. And then Bahrain, I mean, I think Bahrain, they were fairly evenly matched. But I think on the tight streets of Monaco, I think that the Red Bull was the better car. And it was just surprising the amount of pace. I mean, they looked like they were worlds ahead. But I mean, the one car, of course, that really surprised me, we touched about this very briefly in the weekly show a couple of days ago, because the way that Monaco weekend runs, we had the benefit of having practice under our belts by the time we did the show, and we talked about it. And just how pacey that Ferrari were. I mean, if you look at the starting grid, qualifying, I should say. I mean, of course, Leclerc didn't start the race. I mean, the way that we lined up, rows 1 through 5, we had Leclerc and Verstappen, Bottas and Sainz, Norris and Gasly, Hamilton and Vettel, and Perez and Giovinazzi. I mean, of course, that could have changed had Leclerc not crashed at the very end there. But I mean, two Ferraris on the front row. The front two rows. I mean, absolutely mind-boggling stuff compared to where they've been. But I was thinking about it a little bit too, and the one thing that you're not really punished for as much in Monaco is that lack of top-end, high-end speed, right? So that they're going to need, say, next weekend in Baku, where you have these very long straightaways, or some of these other races where maybe, I guess straight-line speed isn't quite as big of an issue that it has been, but I think that still it is, there are some areas that are lacking in this car. But I think when you take away a lot of these things, because I mean, Monaco is a unique track in and of itself. And I think maybe sort of when you boil everything down, that at its very basic level, I think maybe that this Ferrari handles well, it's balanced well, it, I think it's fundamentally a good car on a slow track like that. But I mean, you take it to any of the other 22 other tracks that we're going to race at this year, and when you get into more of these high performance environments, maybe that's where the warts start to show up on that car.
Can we take credit now for our preseason predictions about the fact that Ferrari could be a little bit racy and could challenge McLaren for third place in the Constructors Championship? And ultimately, if they hadn't had such bad luck this weekend, maybe they would be a little bit closer. In fact, they probably would have overtaken McLaren. And I just want to respond quickly to that comment from Diehard Racers, Petrolheads. That comment about different conspiracy theories related to Leclerc's crash, because it's curious, right? Mm-hmm, he puts in a great lap, he's sitting on pole, and then he crashes. I just want to be ultra clear with everybody that there is no alternative universe imaginable where anybody sacrifices their car to secure pole. It again, it's something that's going to feed the conspiracy theorists on Twitter, but that was not intentional.
If now, you're going to do it like Michael Schumacher and just park your car at Rask-Ass and get out and walk away.
Exactly. Or, and this is what I was going to hint at because it's more recent, I would encourage every single one of our listeners to go and actually, you know, don't even Google it. I'm just going to post it on Twitter. Look at the 2014 Monaco qualifying. Nico Rosberg made a mistake going into a corner, ran into a runoff area. The yellow flags came out after he was on pole, which prevented Hamilton from putting in a hot lap that potentially would have put him on pole. Mm-hmm. To me, that was intentional. This certainly wasn't intentional at all. But I agree with your point. I think the package that Ferrari's been bringing this year is good. I don't think they're obviously going to be able to show the same top line speed that some of these other cars have. And maybe they're a little bit racy at Baku, although that kind of long straight along the opening grid might prove to be a little bit challenging for them. But they put together an interesting package. I was absolutely heartbroken for Leclerc. I think the storylines were writing themselves. And for those of you that don't know, a lot of F1 drivers live in Monaco, and they live there for income tax purposes, and Max lives there, and Lewis lives there, and Daniel Ricciardo lives there, and countless others live in Monaco. But Charles Leclerc is actually a Monegasque. He's mm-hmm. from Monaco. Interestingly, there have been 5 racers from Monaco that have raced in a Formula One race there, and one has actually qualified on pole before. But the storyline potentially was that this hometown boy was going to qualify on pole and win this race, and then it was just heartbreaking that it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And maybe now is the right time to talk about this, but that the decision or the gamble, and I don't want to get into the puns because Monaco, Monte Carlo, casinos, etc., but ultimately Ferrari had made a decision that they were going to run the race with this gearbox. And we had a conversation on Twitter yesterday about the fact that if Ferrari had decided to swap out that gearbox, they were going to take a 5-place grid penalty. And the reason for that is that in the Formula One sporting regulations, you have to run the same gearbox for 6 consecutive events. And if you don't, if you swap it out before then, either because it blows or because you just want to, or because of damage from an accident, you're going to take a 5 grid space penalty. So the conversation with them was, is the gearbox in good enough shape to race? If yes, let's race and let's race from pole and potentially win the race. Or if we know it's not, we swap it out, but we take that 5th place grid penalty and we start in 6th place. They made the decision that they were going to race with that gearbox and they were going to take pole. What they didn't know and what they couldn't have known because they couldn't put load through it in the garage was that the left side drive shaft, so the drive shaft on the opposite side of the car to where the car took the impact on those two walls, it failed. And it failed during the formation lap. And it was just, it was heartbreaking for Leclerc because I think so much of the Formula One world was rallying around this idea of Charles Leclerc winning this race. And then it was kind of ripped out from under everybody before the lights even turned green.
You know, I should also mention that the first Monégasque to win his home Grand Prix was Louis Chiron, who won it back in 1931, and that was the livery that Charles had on his helmet this weekend. He won it a year after René Dreyfus, which I wonder if he's related to Chief Inspector Dreyfus from the Pink Panther movies, but that's something completely different. You're shaking your head there, and rightly so. Anyways, just to kind of backing it up there, my own thoughts about the whole Charles Leclerc incident, I don't think that it was intentional, like obviously. I think that what happened with Ferrari is that they came out. I think that maybe it was a surprise that they were as competitive as they were. And I think they just went all in, thinking that this might be the one race this season that we're going to have a good shot for a really good result. Because, I mean, they've already said publicly that they're really throwing all their resources in to developing the 2022 car. So this year's car, it's basically what you see is what you get. And they're not really going to do very much development on it. So I think that
Let me ask you a question.
Sure, go ahead.
If you were Ferrari and you were Mr. Bonato, what decision would you have made? You know what, in the grand scheme of things, you know, we can score a bunch of points starting at 6th, or we can go for glory from first, knowing that there was a risk that maybe we don't start the race. What do you do in that situation?
I make the same call. Look at what happened to Danny Ricciardo a couple of years ago. He drove, what was it, 3/4 of the race with no MGUK. So, I mean, he was 25% down on power and he still won. You know, unfortunately, it didn't work out for Leclerc. It didn't work out for Ferrari. But I think it was a gutsy move by Mattia Bonato, but I would have made the same one, 100%. It was the right thing to do. At that track, you go for it.
I completely agree. At the end of the day, they're not racing or competing for a constructor's title or a driver's title. But if you can take a race win at a crown jewel event like Monaco and you bask in the glory of this and you help build up Charles Leclerc and you help build up his marketing capacity and you help continue to satisfy your sponsors, they did absolutely the right thing. They had everything to win and effectively nothing to lose. And ultimately, he doesn't start the race and it's heartbreaking and they don't score any points. But those points weren't going to be super meaningful for a team as rich as Ferrari anyways, but I think they did absolutely the right thing and I can't criticize them in any way.
Yeah, and you know, as bad as I felt for Bottas, I felt equally as bad for Charles Leclerc because, I mean, this is his home Grand Prix there, and I mean, his luck in his Formula One career, in his hometown, at his home race, has been absolutely miserable. He's probably wondering, what do I need to do to finish this race and have a good result here? Because you have to think that for any driver, if you come from a country that is lucky enough to host a Grand Prix, that's one of the races that you want to win. I mean, there's obviously, you want to win any race, but I mean, that hometown race has to be extra special, especially in a very small place like Monaco, which is like 4 square miles or however ridiculously small it is. I mean, it's bigger than that, of course, but I mean,
I have to give Leclerc credit as well. I think in a lot of cases like this, you're so heartbroken, you shower, you change, and you get out of there. Yeah. He stayed in the garage with his team. He was at the podium to celebrate and congratulate Carlos Sainz. I think from the spirit of being a part of that team and being a fabric of the culture of what that team's trying to become, he played it perfectly. Like, for me, I think I would have been so heartbroken. I don't want to see anyone. I don't want to see the mechanics. I don't want to see Bonato. I'm just going to get out of there. He didn't. He got changed. He stayed with the team. He was in the garage with the mechanics. I think he did everything right, aside from being able to put that car onto the grid. And ultimately, that was kind of his fault because he committed that error. Mm-hmm. But in terms of his response and his reaction to not be able to compete in this race, he did absolutely the right thing. And he was there to support his teammate, who ultimately did score a podium for this team.
Yeah, which is exciting. And, you know, I think that, and we talked about it recently too, but again, I think that Carlos Sainz, I wouldn't say he's exceeding my expectations, but I think he's pleasantly living up to what I would have hoped he could have done soon enough. And I mean, I think they even talked about it on the race broadcast today, just the amount of teams that Carlos has driven for over the past 5 or 6 years. And essentially changing cars that often is such a huge hurdle, because it's almost like having to learn driving like a brand new formula, a different style of racing car, which was fascinating. So I think he's done a great job so far. I mean, props to Charles for sticking around, being a good teammate. And I think he gets it. I think that he's obviously young enough to realize, you know, I'm at Ferrari. You know, we've got every resource and monetary opportunity behind us. My time is still to come. Yeah, today sucks because, again, it's my home Grand Prix. Again, it didn't work out, but that chance may or may not come. And I'm sure he'll get his chance, obviously, to, I mean, it's bound to happen at some point. And, you know, that bad luck can only go so long. But where should we go to now? I want to take a break in a couple of minutes. Okay,
go ahead. I think
you
actually teed up the perfect segue. Perfect. So I'm going to interrupt because you teed this up perfectly. So Carlos Sainz makes the transition from an up-and-coming McLaren team to Ferrari. He puts in an 8th place, a 5th place, finishes out of the points, a 7th, and now a 2nd place finish. He's got 38 points. To your point, I feel like he's starting to get comfortable with that team. Mm-hmm. He's starting to get comfortable with that car, and he's really rounding into shape. And I think by the end of the season, he could really be what Ferrari wants him to be. On the other end of the spectrum is another highly qualified driver that made a transition from one team in the offseason to another in Daniel Ricciardo. And this is something that a number of our listeners had actually asked us on Twitter to address, which is his season started rough. And mm-hmm. I think there were some early explanations for that, right? He's with a new team. It's a new car. It's a new power unit. He needs some time to adjust. But the challenge for Daniel Ricciardo is he doesn't seem to be making any progress. Lando has just scored his 2nd podium of the season. It's the 3rd, 4th time he's finished in the top 5. And Ricciardo actually seems to be regressing. And mm-hmm. I want to give everyone a point of reference here. Today, Lando Norris was lapping a second faster than his teammate. And I went through some data from the last 10 to 15 years. I couldn't find another example of when that could happen or when that happened without a mechanical explanation or because of weather issues or something like that. What we're seeing is pretty unheard of. And Daniel, obviously, I think he's feeling a little bit under the gun. And yeah. I want to read this quote here. So the teams record a ton of analytics and a ton of telemetry with the car. So if you're competing with your teammate, they can look at the telemetry and they can say, look, here's where your teammate's braking. Here's where he's accelerating. Here's where he's turning in. Here's where he's changing gears. And a quote from Daniel Ricciardo was a little bit shocking. I'm going to read this out. There's differences on the data. And it's like, well, this is why Lando is quicker in this corner. And I'm not convinced I'm able to do that. And the engineers and Ricciardo seem to have identified 2 key distinct issues that he's facing relative to Lando. One is that he's not rotating the car as effectively in the corner, so he's not making the turn as quickly as Lando is, and that could be a familiarity issue. But the other one is this, he's not able to brake as late as Lando. So Lando is able to carry speed into a corner much, much later than Ricciardo is. But really, Ricciardo's performance so far has been pretty shocking. And I just thought the Carlos Sainz conversation about making a transition from one team to another, scoring a podium, and Ricciardo on the other end of the spectrum.
Well, I got plenty of thoughts on that, and I'll give you my thoughts in just a moment as we take a break here, and we'll come back and we'll discuss this and more in just a moment. So don't go away.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Okay, well, welcome back to the show. And Mark, I have to be upfront and clear and completely honest with you. I'm mad at you. You stole my bit there. I mean,
I can see it in your face.
I have to give you full credit because, I mean, you picked up on it so nicely, but I wanted to kind of like bridge it to, can we talk about Danny Ricciardo? We need to talk about Danny Ricciardo. So, good for you for picking up on that. But yeah, I think you raise a number of really, really good points there. And I think the one that is really interesting is just the late breaking thing, the issue that was identified that he's breaking or he's not breaking as deep into the corners as Lando is not carrying that speed through. I find that fascinating for a couple of reasons, because Danny Ricciardo is, he's almost built that reputation of the last of the late breakers. That's kind of like been his thing
over
the past several years. So that is absolutely fascinating. And I would agree that I feel that he's regressed a little bit. I mean, Lando, of course, has the benefit that he's been with the team for several years now. I mean, he's really ingrained in the culture within the team. He knows the personnel. He knows the car. He knows everything. I mean, what you would expect. And I think he's doing a great job as a young driver. And obviously, that's part of a major reason why he got that contract extension just earlier this week, right? So, of course, coming into another team is going to be a big issue for somebody. I mean, it's going to be something that's, especially in this day and age, when you have the reduced testing and all these sorts of things. But compared to some of his comrades that also switched teams last year, I'm not so much worried about Sergio Perez. I think over the last 2.5 races-ish, I think that I'm in a better place with where Sergio is compared to the first couple of races of the year. I think that it's slowly starting to turn around, and based on the result that he got today, sure, it wasn't a podium, but the result that he got based on where he started, I think was fantastic for Monaco, brought them the points that they needed. He did the great supporting job for his team, or for the team in that regard. And yeah, it's only a single point ahead in the constructors at this point, but psychologically that gap is huge. I mean, there's now that chink in the armor, and I think that, for many reasons, this weekend's going to be a wake-up call, but for Mercedes, that is. And then also, just as we talked about Carlos Sainz, he seems to really be settling in nicely at Ferrari, and it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I mean, just to sort of finish off thought that we were talking about before the break and kind of wrap it up nicely with a bow, is if you can get both Carlos and Charles really, really racing well in that car, and you give them a competitive car for 22, I think Ferrari could be a real legitimate threat next year. So it's really tantalizing if you're a Ferrari fan. But now to kind of bring it full circle and go back to Daniel Ricciardo, I'm a little bit worried. I would have expected by this point that he would have been able to get a better handle on this car, especially at Monaco. I mean, he's won this race before. Historically, he's run well here over the years. And just, I mean, he qualified poorly. And just during the race, I mean, he was, I mean, so far off of the pace. I mean, outside of the points. I mean, at no point during this race today did I think, oh, well, maybe if Ricciardo is a little bit lucky, maybe he'll get a point out of this. I had no thoughts like that whatsoever. I mean, it also was very fascinating that we didn't have a single safety car, virtual safety car, which is a rarity in of itself. But yeah, the whole Ricciardo thing, it's just, it's mind-boggling. I think he's got to go and do some serious soul-searching and figuring out what he needs to do to get the best out of this car, because his teammate is really, really outperforming and outshining him by a long shot at this point in time.
And that was absolutely the quote that Daniel Ricciardo shared coming out of this race weekend, which is, I think oftentimes following a Grand Prix weekend, the drivers spend hours, days, a week with their engineers just pouring through the data, pouring through the telemetry, trying to understand what they could have done different, what could have gone wrong. And Daniel made it very clear that he's going to step away from the team for a few days just to breathe and relax and decompress and come back fresh later this week heading into the week of the Baku Grand Prix, because I think, to your point, that's probably what he needs at this point. And to be clear, it's not like he hasn't been scoring points. He's been in the top 10 for the first four races, but he's so far away from Lando Norris. It's absurd. And I think the most striking thing about his performance today was he he was lapped by Lando, and mm-hmm. he wasn't having mechanical issues. He didn't have a pit issue. He wasn't having tire issues. He wasn't having mechanical issues, and he was lapped by his teammate. And ultimately, yeah. that's what's going to happen if your teammate is outrunning you by a second a lap. It's not sustainable. He's obviously a great driver. And to your point, he's won here before. He potentially would have won here twice if not for that crazy tire issue back in, I think it was probably 16. But yeah, a little bit shocking, to be totally honest.
Yeah, and that one point that you mentioned, how he was lapped by Lando, that was brought up by Joe Santucci at ATX Santucci. He mentioned that on Twitter as well. A number of people picked up on a couple of things. Carlos Hernandez at Old Vinyls, he mentioned, I was surprised by Ocon's inability to overtake Stroll after Stroll pitted and then falling so far behind. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a combination of Monaco being Monaco and that the Alpine, despite that we've talked about it before, that Ocon seems to be maybe flying under the radar as maybe a bit of an underrated and underappreciated driver. I think it's just a combination of the fact that, you know, the car isn't the greatest on a track that is pretty tough to pass on at under any circumstances, pardon me. And then a couple here that I think are interesting from Apache the Pirate and Rob Ledoux. We'll forgive Rob for the Maple Leafs avatar on his Twitter handle, but hey, we're not going to start petty arguments over hockey here, even though it is playoffs. Anyhow, they were both talking about, and I know you've been plugging Chain Bear on the show recently. Anyways, Grant kind of kicked off this conversation, said Chain Bear said this, and I'd love to get your thoughts. And the quote is, has F1 outgrown Monaco? And Rob was pretty much asking this the same thing. And yeah, I think it has. I think that you know, without a doubt, this is my least favorite race of the entire year. I know that it's basically, you know, Formula One racing at home for all the reasons that you mentioned. And there's the historical context of it as well. But you know, I guess there's that kind of glamour to it as well. But I don't know. I'm just not a fan of the circuit itself. I mean, I do find it a bit of a novelty. I do kind of enjoy to kind of see the glitz and the glamour. I know Serena Williams was there to wave the checkered flag, and then you also always have the Prince Rainier or whatever his name is. Well, I'm not going to get an invite from the royal family of Monaco anytime soon with that embarrassing plug, but you know what I mean, right? I mean, there's that sort of I guess that opulence and that you know, that kind of feel to it, and that's part of the, I guess, the draw of it from that point. But racing itself, I think so. The cars aren't suited to the track. The track is too tight. It's too narrow. It's too slow. It's just not fun to watch.
I hate that you use the word novelty, because it seems apt. It actually seems accurate. And I don't think Formula One has outgrown Monaco in an economic sense. It
No.
still makes economic sense for the sport. But in terms of the vehicles themselves, absolutely. And I've got some interesting data here, because I wanted to go back and try to get a sense of how big these cars have become. As much as Bottas and Hamilton spoke quite a lot this weekend about how much he hates this race. He's like, it's boring from the front, it's boring from the back, there's no passing, there's no racing, it's really a procession. But ultimately, the biggest challenge here isn't the track, because you can't change the track. Ultimately, you're not going to start blowing up buildings to make corners wider and create runoff area. The track is the track. There's very, very, very little they can do. The problem is the cars. And this was a point that a number of our listeners, including Dead Randy, kind of reinforced, which is the cars have gotten too big. And let me share some data. If you go back to 2007, so the specifications here are the F2007, Ferrari's 2007 Challenger, and the SF90, which is Ferrari's 2019 Challenger. The 2007 car was 179 inches long. The 2019 car was 224 inches. The cars have grown by 3.5 feet in length, and the wheelbase has grown by 1.5 feet. And we also posted some illustrations on the Twitter. So please go follow us on Twitter so you can see these things. But the cars have become absurdly large. So whatever opportunity there was for passing, it diminishes when the cars get to be so absurdly long. And not only that they long, they've gotten wider as well. They haven't gotten taller naturally, but they're just that much bigger, which makes it physically more challenging. So I think in the sense that has F1 outgrown Monaco physically, yes. and economically no. And I'm afraid it's going to remain a novelty because it means so much to the sport from a legacy and a tradition and a monetary perspective. But we're never going to see great racing here. And I'll be honest, I actually watched a little bit of the F2 sprint race on Saturday our time, and it was wet. And I was excited, like, is there a chance that we could have moisture for Sunday? And of course we didn't. But that's really the only thing that can make this race exciting. That or a safety car, which bunches up the pack and kind of enables a restart during the course of the race. But other than that, there was nothing. And that was maybe the other challenge today too, is I had predicted that we were going to see four or five or six cars not finish the race. And I think a lot of our listeners had reached out and said the exact same thing, like how many cars are actually going to finish? How many cars are going to finish? But a lot of the drivers drove very conservatively, and it meant that there wasn't a lot of damage or crashes and that there weren't any safety cars, which just reinforced how boring the race could be without those stops and those restarts during the course of the action.
Well, I think that you painted that picture nicely when we talked about the start of the race going into Sandoval at turn one there at the start of the race. And the way that Max angled his car was that he was going to the suboptimal start compared to Bottas, he was just always kind of driving that along that angle anyways. And as long as he was going to be in front of Bottas, the decision as to what was going to happen that corner was always going to be up to Bottas, because ultimately he would drive into Max and then cause a collision, and then that would be it. But I mean, I was surprised that they, you know, all 20 cars, well, I guess 19 cars, made it through that corner without the sort of traditional shower of carbon fiber. You know, and then just the fact that we even talked about it when we did the preview on Thursday night is that there were, you know, the only mechanical failure of the entire race besides Charles, which is a bit of a question as to the origin of that drive shaft failure, was Bottas, and that was a wheel nut. It wasn't an MGUK. It wasn't overheating brakes. It wasn't a radiator. It wasn't any other, you know, brakes or anything else that it could have been. And that was very surprising. And the fact that nobody tagged a barrier, nobody crashed during the race, I mean, it was unusual. And sadly, from that point of view, it kind of made it a little bit of a not the most exciting race. Now, I want to go back to the Twitter. We got another message here. This time is from Betangura William. He touched on a bunch of things, including Max, Carlos Sainz, Perez. The one thing that we haven't talked about, and he mentioned it, and that's Vettel's comeback. I think that obviously this has been a bit of a tough start for Sebastian Vettel at Aston Martin. Obviously, they've had some issues with the car. Obviously, he had some issues with himself in the very first race when he drove up the backside of Esteban Ocon, Bahrain, and he struggled a little bit, but I think that he's got to be pleased with that. I mean, he's got to, you know, build on this, of course, going into the next race in Baku and beyond, but I think that this was a nice, I don't want to say a reset for Aston Martin, but I think this was finally a race. I think that they might breathe a sigh of relief. Seb in the top five, both cars in the top 10, double points finish. And even though they weren't really super racy, both cars finished. And I think that's good for them.
I think it's fantastic for Aston Martin. If nothing else, it takes a little bit of the edge, a little bit of the pressure off, because to back this up, this is the first time this year Sebastian Vettel's been in the points. And I think it was probably a huge relief for him to get that monkey off his back. And as much as it's been challenging for Vettel, Stroll's really struggled as well. He was in the points the first two races, and then he finished out of the points in the third and the fourth race of the championship. And if you look at the final classification today, so Max Verstappen made up a position, but really that was just a downstream knock-on effect of the fact that Leclerc wasn't able to start the race. Carlos Sainz finished up two places. Lando Norris finished up two places. Sergio Perez, terrific performance, finished up five places. Sebastian Vettel picked up three spots, and Lance Stroll picked up five spots. So as good a day as it was for Vettel, Lance Stroll also put in a tidy little performance. And
yep.
Both of them throughout the course of the race. I think Lance had a little bit of a miscue when he hit the curbs at one point. He was lucky he didn't end up in a barrier himself or suffer any suspension or floor damage. But ultimately, it was a nice weekend for Aston Martin. And I think I can't remember on Thursday, did I predict that they would be out of the points or if I predicted they would be in the points? obviously it wasn't a meaningful prediction, but to your point, I think it was a great weekend for them. And I think from their perspective, maybe they can build on this a little bit. And given the fact that we're going into another funky race in Baku, which is kind of a hybrid of a Monaco and a more traditional track, simply because they have that long straightaway along the starting grid, it'll be interesting to see how they look going into that race after a double points finish in Monaco.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting to see how they build on this. I mean, obviously that they have issues with that car, what with the whole high rake or low rake, whatever it is, the problems that they've had with the new aero rules for this year, and the problems that they've had to adapt, and the fact that they've just basically struggled right out of the gate. And it will be interesting, because I mean, Baku, like you say, is a very interesting track, because a lot of the corners on that track and a lot of the segments on that track are very Monaco-esque.
Yeah.
But then you throw in that very long, that straightaway, that's a bit of a dogleg, sort of doglegs to the left, about a third to a half away down that straightaway. And then you pass the pit entrance, you pass start finish, and then you go into that 90 degree left hander, and then into another 90 degree left hander after a short run up into turn two. So it's a difficult track, because, you know, it does match Monaco in some ways, but the fact that you throw that very, very long straightaway in there makes it very interesting. And that's why I think it's going to be it'll be fun to see what Ferrari can do there, because obviously that top end speed was not such a crucial factor today. And they did everything they could to work to the strengths of that car, and we'll see if they can do that at the next race out. Hey, got a couple more thoughts. I want to get to those in a moment, and we'll do that as we take our final break here, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Listen closely. As a master painter carefully brushes Benjamin Moore Regal Select down the seam of the wall. It's like poetry in motion. Benjamin Moore, see the love.
Okay, Mark, well, welcome back to you and to everyone. Just a couple more things that we want to get to. Just wanted to go back and look at the Twitters. A couple more tweets here from at Davey Rattan. He was talking about Charles Leclerc and also Lando Norris. We also had one here from at Broncos Elite. He was talking about the comments from Leclerc, Bottas, Lewis, and more, just changing the layout of the track somehow. I think we addressed that already. But I mean, it's interesting too, because we've seen this at other tracks. I mean, that's why I'm looking forward to seeing the upgraded or updated Albert Park track in Australia later this year. We saw the changes at Turn 10 in Spain a couple of weeks ago. And that's the one thing that they just can't do in Monaco. I mean, we've seen it work in other places, but when you have immovable objects like buildings rather than gravel traps and grass, it really makes it a little bit difficult. But still, you know, you would hope that they might be able to do something, but I just like you so, you know, eloquently put it, just the physical confines and just the layout of Monaco itself basically makes it a non-factor, or, you know, cost prohibitively. So I shouldn't use words I can't pronounce, right? And then BJ Crabtree had a couple things to talk about. He was complaining about cutting to TV commercials during one of the only passes of the race. I can completely understand that. And full disclosure here, we're not affiliated with the F1 TV, but I've signed up for it this year, and I've been watching on F1 TV, and it is just so much of a difference how much my own race experience has like improved with not having to worry about the producer back in the studio cutting to commercials at a very awkward moment, which has been my complaint for years and years and years. I've still been PVRing everything, but I've just been casting everything to the TV, my Apple TV, from my phone, and it's just it's been phenomenal. I'm just really enjoying that. So BJ, I'm not suggesting you go that way, but I guess kind of I am. You know, if you can spare some spare coin, then maybe that's something you want to consider. And then a couple other things. He was just talking about the relationship between Carlos and Norris, which I think was really nicely worked at DTS last year. He had a comment, what he called the big whiff on Mercedes pit strategy after dominating last week. And then he said at the end, love Serena, but let Max Verstappen shine. So, you know, but again, I guess that's kind of that, I don't want to say love affair that Formula One has kind of with like A-list celebrities, but
especially
yeah,
at Monaco.
Yeah, especially at Monaco. That's when they're going to kind of play up that angle. But yeah, you know, a lot of different things there. But yeah, I mean, I guess I would have liked to see a little bit more attention on Max. But yeah, you're going to get a lot of the glitz and that sort of stuff, regardless who wins or whatever happens at Monaco.
The only thing I want to add, and I have a feeling this might be what BJ is actually referring to here, is there was an awful lot of angst on Twitter today about the fact that at the precise moment the ultra exciting duel between Gasly and Vettel was happening, the race director of the broadcast actually cut to Lance hitting curbs. So we actually missed possibly the most exciting moment in the race. And the actual commentator spoke on this. So I did a little bit of research. A little bit of half-assed internet research. I went to Google and I searched for F1 broadcast directors. And as it turns out, and this is kind of interesting, historically, Formula One has owned the entire production of the race broadcast. Camera placement, cameras, race directors, commentary, everything. They own it all. And then Sky provides their own commentary. For a couple of races, the British Grand Prix, the Japanese Grand Prix, and Monaco, they actually defer to local television stations. So they lend them some of their infrastructure, some of their cameras, the helicopter shots, and things like that. But ultimately, they leave it up to those individual TV stations to piece together the broadcast. In recent years, they've stopped in the UK, and they've stopped in Japan. So Monaco now is the only event where a local television station, it's actually a French TV station, TMC, pieces together the race. So they actually have somebody outside of Formula One that performs the race directing duties. So what you're seeing on your TV isn't actually being dictated by Formula One itself, who, as you can probably guess, knows the sport. It's actually being dictated by a sports director from this French TV station. So there was a ton of criticism today about the fact that the race direction was terrible. Why isn't Formula One doing it themselves? Mm-hmm. My sense is that they probably will next year, that this was probably a tipping point, and they're probably not going to defer to external counsel to produce their F1 races, especially if it's going to create so much negativity.
Yeah, I mean, especially when it's going to be, like you called it earlier, one of the crown jewel events on the entire calendar.
Exactly.
You know, they're going to want to make sure that regardless what happens on the track, that the TV production side of it is going to be absolutely first class. And, you know, it is kind of funny, too, because, you know, you draw like some parallels with other big sports. I mean, specifically like the NFL. I mean, everything when it comes to like the NFL, I don't want to say it's... I guess the best way to describe an NFL broadcast is manicured. I mean, the way that they're so precise. I mean, the amount of time that they have for like commercials to 7 minutes for halftime and all these different things. It is just it's like as precise as a Japanese train schedule or a Swiss watch. I mean, it is impressive how they package it up and produce it. And I think that's obviously something that Formula One needs to address in some of these races in some of these cases, because the difference today was noticeable. You know, when you kind of get the focus of somebody that's, you know, obviously very good at their job, but maybe just doesn't have that that little extra bonus of that that knowledge that you need to produce a specialized event like a Grand Prix. So anyways, what else do we have? We got a little bit of time left. Did you want to throw in a MotoGP corner? I'm giving you the opportunity here, you know.
You know what's funny? For the first time ever, I'm going to defer. Because
you're
going to
defer.
I didn't come in hot. I didn't come in fired up to talk about MotoGP. But I think I will take a minute to plug our social media presence.
Sure.
We do have Twitter. We have a Twitter account. And I just want to thank, and I'm never going to name somebody unless you reach out and ask us a specific question or something like that, in which case I think it's kind of implied that you want us to refer to you on the air, which I know as a listener and a contributor of questions to other podcasts, it's something that I always enjoy. But the number of folks that have added us on Twitter over the last few days and weeks is amazing. And my commitment always is that if you do add us, we'll make the effort to reach out, we'll say thank you, and we're happy to engage, answer your questions. What we're trying to build on Twitter is really just a community. And I would encourage and implore everybody to join, because ultimately the direction of the show is really driven by the questions that a lot of you ask and the themes and the things that you're interested in. And even today, the entire structure of this show was built around the things that you found interesting and curious about the Grand Prix. So once again, if you haven't added us on Twitter, even if you're not a big Twitter user, I encourage you to add us there. We're trying to add a lot of value, especially knowing that a lot of our listeners are newer to Formula One. The things that we're tweeting, the context that we're providing, the things that we're retweeting, and the context that we're providing, we're trying to cater to an audience that's coming into the sport or has been in the sport for a while, but maybe wants to kind of have a bit of a refresher on some things. So anything we post, we try to provide some context. We try to provide a lot of resources, but we also just want to have a lot of fun. So if you haven't added us, please do. We really would enjoy it if you could. But I think that's it. It's just something I've wanted to plug for a while because I feel like we're getting a little bit of momentum now. We're committing some time. We're creating some branded collateral to make it a little bit more lively and specific to us and in our family and our community. But if you haven't, please do. And then finally as well, just a last minute plug. If you do subscribe, which I hope you do if you're listening to us, please go to whatever podcast platform you're using, whether it's iTunes or whatever the Google variation is. I'm not super, super familiar with the Android devices. Please subscribe if you haven't. Give us a review. Give us 5 stars, 4 stars, whatever you feel comfortable giving us based on what you think of our efforts and the production quality and things like that. We really appreciate it. And just to be ultra clear to everybody here, we're not making any money doing this. We're doing this for fun because we love the sport, because we're passionate about sports journalism and broadcasting and all those kind of things. But we just want to be able to create a product that all of you are proud of and that you enjoy. So I don't know if you want to add anything on to that long rambling speech that would otherwise have been MotoGP Corner.
Yeah, you know, I guess it was Social Media Corner this time out. But yeah, no, I totally agree with that. You know, I love the fact that, you know, so many people have been getting in touch. Love the fact that, you know, so many messages recently have been not just from Gen DTS, but also from people, hey, you know, I've been into Formula One for a lot of time, but I got out of it for a few years, but now I'm getting back into it and been checking out your podcast, DTS, all these different things. Love hearing all these things. And, you know, get in touch, you know, ask us a question, leave a comment. We just love talking about Formula One. So we're more than happy to answer that. And it's just fun. We just like talking about different things. And if we can make it understandable, enjoyable for all of you that regardless if you've been a fan for a week or 20 or 30 years, 50 years, whatever, whatever it is, it's all good. I mean, the common denominator is we're all Formula One fans, and we love the sport, and that's what it's all about. So, you know, I don't have anything else today. You know, if you're going to do sort of these MotoGP corner, you know, maybe I should do. You know, we're already kind of like 2/3 of the way through the Giro d'Italia. Maybe I'll do cycling corner in time for the Tour in July. So we'll see. That's just an idle threat. I'm not going to go through with the guys. But anyway, so let's get out. You know, while things are still going good and the whole thing doesn't implode on us. So let's just wrap it up there. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Again, our Twitter handle at ScuderiaF1Pod. And if you also want to send an email, you can also do that at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. And that's it. On behalf of myself and Mark Hamilton, enjoy the rest of your weekend. If you've got tomorrow off, enjoy the rest of your week, or then enjoy the start of the new week, I should say. And we'll be back in a couple of days with the weekly show. Until then, take care, stay in touch, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye for now. We'll be right back.